take a moment before we begin to silence and put away your cell phones and other electronic devices. Thank you. My name is Amanda, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting at the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organizations, or institutions, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about Safety in AA, see the AA Safety Card and Safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Chris will read the steps.
Okay, Chris Alcoholic. Right, I'm going to try to look at this thing and speak into the microphone at the same time. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God so we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. Tonight is anniversary night, and as such, we will be honoring our celebrants at the start of the meeting. Tonight, we have 3 celebrants. Would the celebrants please join me up front? We take this time each month to recognize group members as they mark milestones in their sobriety. It is our belief that pausing in gratitude for these milestones provides hope and inspiration and also fosters love and support for one another. We do ask everyone to keep in mind the number of celebrants and the end time of the meeting. It is the group's conscience that celebrants limit their shares to a minute or so. And now, please join me in singing.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear celebrants. Happy anniversary to you.
All right. Tonight, our first celebrant is Catherine R. with 1 year.
Catherine, alcoholic. I thought this was at the end of the meeting, so I was planning on spending some time thinking about what I was going to say, because everything I had planned before has kind of gone out the window. So that's not the case, and here I am. I guess I just want to thank everyone in this room, because, having an active group, having meetings where so many people are so committed to the program, allowed me a place to come a year ago when my life was kind of at it's rock bottom. So I just want to thank all of you for showing up, even when it's rainy, when it's snowy, when you don't feel like it, because you're here, I'm here tonight. So thank you.
Okay, up next we have Virginia with 8 years.
I'm Virginia, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Virginia.
And I'm newer to the area and to this group, but thank you for allowing me to celebrate here. So 8 years, this is a big milestone for me. I am a leap year baby, yeah. So tomorrow's like technically my second birthday, but 8 years technically, but yeah, how I did it. So, you know, there were lots of areas in my sobriety that I almost drank, and how I did it is I finally turned everything in my life over to God and my higher power. I would not be here today had I not turned over relationships, finances, fear of the future, self-pity, grief, like all those things have almost turned me to a drink. But by turning it over, picking up the phone, helping others, coming to meetings, even though it's the last thing I wanted to do, is why I'm picking up 8 years today. So that's all I have. Thanks.
And next we have Christina. Ooh, I think I gave you hers by accident. And this is 8. Roman numerals are kind of tricky. Next we have Christina with 13 years.
Hi, I'm Christina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Christina.
Thank you so much. This means a lot to me, and I'm a big Taylor Swift fan, so 13 is, like, really important. And sorry if that annoys you, but I'm not sorry. And you guys are stuck with me for 30 minutes tonight, so I'll yield the meeting back time back to the meeting. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Wait, I think, oh, I lost my spot. Okay, congratulations to you all. You may now return to your seats, but you're already there. Okay, thank you. Because of tonight's celebration, the format of the meeting is only one 10-minute speaker followed by our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statements of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is David F.
All right.
So I can keep track. Hi, David, alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Where to begin? I am an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. You know, I'm servicing that home group. I work with other guys in this program. I sponsor other men. And, my sobriety date is December 1st, 2020. It's when I kind of became willing to, I hit that bottom, that true bottom. I thought I had hit many bottoms before that. I reset my clock a few times before that. I do like to add to that as I took my fifth step on February 14th, 2021, and that date is more important to me probably than my sobriety date, because it's really where a lot of things started to change. Changing my life for the better, and I'm able to stay sober. I look at it as that's what's kept me sober so far. When I look back at, my experience, I tried it different ways, I'll just back up a little bit. I was introduced to AA for myself in 2018, my life was becoming really unmanageable, and I started to get in trouble. The consequences started coming, but even before that, to back up even further, I saw the effects of alcoholism in my family.
you know, with my dad. First time going to a detox was to pick up his belongings. You know, my my father died from alcoholism. And I like to say that because, like, that's, like, the warning signs were there for me, you know. And I don't know, fast forward some years later, a few decades later, here I am dealing with the same thing. So I never really wanted to be an alcoholic, but I don't think I had a choice in that. You know, I always had these feelings of impending doom and, you know, fears, insecurities, and doubt. I always felt like something was off. You know, and I always was like sensitive to emotions, right? I felt like really sensitive, and you know, I felt things were heavy for me, you know, even at a young age. So, you know, when I first read in the book Restless, Irritable, and Discontent, I knew exactly what they were talking about. I was uncomfortable, you know, and alcohol came in many forms for me. And it brought me comfort, you know. Eventually, it brought me comfort, and in all its forms. And I was able to control it for a while. You know, I had fun with it early on. Maybe I was a type 2 alcoholic, you know, but I was able to control it. I was able to pick it up and put it down until I couldn't, you know. And it took a while for me to get here. You know, and, you know, I finally got here, and I knew, you know, I thought I knew what was best for me, you know, and I reset my clock a bunch of times. You know, it was in and out. It was a process of trial and error. And, you know, so what happened, 2018, just a quick timeline, you know, 2018, 2019, most of those years I was sober. Most of those months of those 2 years I was sober, but I reset my clock, you know, and I was counting months and you know, looking back at it, I see it for what it is, you know, post-step work, you know. Eventually, I found an emotional attachment, you know. I liked the way it made me feel. I liked the change the way I felt my entire life with finding a behavior, and I found that behavior with alcohol and its substitutes, and the combination between those two things, that's what I did. You know, I would feel some type of way, and I would pick up without my permission, completely powerless, and I had no idea, right? I was in denial of that, because I was gonna, you know, I held the power to it, and you know, the last time out, you know, my, you know, 2020, you know, COVID, I was completely isolated, and I was off. I tried to get sober a bunch of times in that year. And, you know, luckily I had made some connections, you know, in 2018 and 2019. And, you know, I had met somebody in a halfway house, and, I saw his life changing. And, I remember asking him, I remember actually pleading to him, crying to him on the phone, like, what am I doing wrong? Why can't I stay sober, right? Like, I made this decision to not do something, and why am I doing it anyway? And I said, I need help, you know. So I went to detox that last time. I came out, and I knew what was going to happen, right? I knew that I was going to go upstairs, right? I pulled into my parking lot and my where I lived, and I knew I was going to go upstairs and use. And I called, you know, I called my sponsor today, and I said, I need help. He said, call me tomorrow. I got you. And we went right to work, you know. The next day, we went to work, and I took that vigorous course of action, and I haven't stopped. Recently, I've kind of took my foot off the gas, and I'm actually starting to feel the effects of, you know, not working my program, I guess, to the fullest. But that's okay, you know, like I'm still here, I'm still sober, and you know, I've found power, right, to this powerlessness through these actions, and I'm so grateful for that, you know. And that's kind of how I, you know, I see it. I see there's power in this program, right, these 12 steps, and the principles behind them. And You know, I believe in that result, you know, and that change, you know. I don't know, it's been a wild ride. So what happened? I don't even know. You know, at some point I just started to be able to look back, and I started to gain this momentum and look back and see the small changes. And, you know, it's almost unexplainable. Like, how do I even explain what that is, you know? But I believe in that power, right? That power greater than myself is this idea. Well, first it was like, life is tough, right? Like, it's full of, you know, heartache and grief and challenges. And I think without process, it's just bottling up. And I never really understood that. Like, I would just kind of get lost in it. So I got to a point where I was just so shut off from myself. And I remember starting to do this work. It was just so foreign to me to talk about and release this stuff. So, like, when I look back at that day I took my fifth step, it was so relieving and it was so painful. It almost got a little worse before it got better. But slowly over time, looking back at it, it's gotten better. You know, those fears, doubts, and insecurities, like, I've started to outgrow those fears and be able to do things that normally I wouldn't want to do. I like to joke and say that I never would have been an alcoholic if I knew I had to do this. If I knew this was part of the job description, nope. But here I am, and I'm able to do it. And, you know, not my favorite thing to do, but it is. It's a responsibility. It's a way to be of service, and there's power in it, right? Power of service and power of perspective, power of practicing humility and you know, all these things that we do, you know, in this program. You know, so things have changed. So, like, you know, I look at the promise, the promises, and I don't know, my good friend in here, he likes to say there's 252 promises. I don't know if I believe him. I don't know if he's counting them, but I know I've received some of them for sure. You know, I can handle situations that once used to baffle me, this being one. You know, when I'm not so sensitive, I'm not so, like, fear-driven or paralyzed by this fear that I once felt my entire life. I've really started to outgrow it, and I just process information differently, and I'll always forever be grateful for that. This group was a big part for me early on. You know, there's a lot of commitment here, and I have a lot of love and respect for this group. So, Joe, I don't even know if you're in here. I haven't seen you, but thanks for asking me to speak. Thanks.
Thank you, David. We will now observe the seventh tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA's service. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket. But you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. Our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan. She's not here. You can see me. If you have any questions, thank you in advance for your generosity. AA has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Laura has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, Laura, alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
Oh.
Hi, Laura.
I just
left it like that.
Okay. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Laura. Beacon Group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month immediately following the speaker meeting, both here at Temple Beth Zion and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? Okay, and now let's welcome our main speaker, Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you, Amanda, for asking me to speak. Hi, little one. You're so cute. My sobriety date is February 26, 2011. So I had just celebrated 13 years on Monday, which Monday was like a great day. The weather was really nice. I had like good news at work. I got like some really good cookies. I was on a high on Monday. It was wonderful. And you know what was funny is I was on a walk around work during the middle of the day and enjoying my day. And I walked by a restaurant and it had a sign saying they have to-go cocktails. And I was like, you can buy to-go cocktails in the city of Boston? And it just brought me so quickly back to like the kind of drinker I was. Like, I would not have survived in a world where I could buy to-go cocktails from a restaurant at the bottom of my building where I worked. That would have been bad. I mean, I made my own to-go cocktails, but like a legal one that I could gladly walk around with and like have it be socially acceptable would have been very, very bad for everyone. So I'm super grateful I got sober before that happened, at least in Boston. I know you can do it in other places. To tell you a little bit about, you know, what it was like and what happened and what I'm like now, I grew up around a lot of alcoholism, and I grew up around a lot of drug addiction and a lot of dysfunction, and I still chose to start drinking anyways, you know, and I was the kid, like, I won the DARE award in like sixth grade, which I think at the time my mom was like, huh, my kid? Because like I was very good, you know, like I was not an early drinker, you know, I think I had my first drink in like seventh or eighth grade. But like fifth or sixth grade, I won the DARE award, and with the family that I grew up with, that was a little surprising, and I wish I still had the essay that won me the award. But you know, I had a lot of reasons. There was a lot of evidence that, like, drinking probably wasn't going to work out for me. And I still decided to do it, you know, and I still kind of chased it, and I was curious, and maybe that's part of it, right? Like, maybe I saw what it, like, did to people around me, and yet they continued to do it, and maybe that's why I wanted. But once I started, like, there was no stopping me. You know, I don't think I ever didn't get drunk in my entire life once I started drinking. I never had a drink or two, got a little buzzed and stopped. I was talking to a kid I manage on my team the other day, and he told me how he went to a bar at 8 a.m. on Sunday to watch a soccer game.
And I was like, did you drink? And he was like, I did. And I was like, how was that? And he was like, oh, worst Sunday ever. I got home. I just drank water for like 4 hours. And I just like tried to get like the wheels back on my Sunday so I could have like a productive day. And like, that is not what my drinking looks like. Like in my head, I'm just like, yeah. And I literally said to him, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, if you start at 8 a.m., you have to keep going. Like you have to commit and just do the whole day. And that's what my drinking looked like at the end. You know, my drinking at the end, I'm jumping ahead, but like my drinking at the end, you know, right? Like I was getting drunk before work, you know, I was 6 or 6:30 a.m. like doing shots in my room by myself because my roommates like knew what was going on, and I couldn't go to my job without like being a little drunk. But backing up to like where I started, yeah, I mean, it really escalated very quickly, and I don't know what alcohol did for me. I used to say like, oh, I feel like it. And you know, I feel like a lot of us say like, oh, it made me feel free. It made me feel not shy. Like it definitely did all of those things. I felt very cool when I drank. I often did things that got me a lot of attention for better or worse. I think I liked that. But yeah, it did something for me, and I chased it with everything that I had the minute I started, and I would drink every chance I got, you know, as a teenager. And as I grew up, and again, you know, there were a lot of reasons around me not to drink, you know, and when I went, the summer before I went to go to college, I got a DUI when I was, you know, 3 days post turning 18 years old. And it didn't really matter because like I was moving to Boston a month later. Like I lost my license like 2 days before I moved to Boston, and I didn't need a license anymore. And, you know, it kind of like, and so, you know, and I had to pay a small fine that luckily I could pay. And those were the consequences. I had to go to an AA meeting, which I went to with my mom, who is now sober, but was not at the time. And, you know, I had to go to a couple AA meetings and get a court signed slip. So if you're here doing that, welcome. And, you know, I didn't take it seriously, and I thought it was weird. I'm pretty sure my mom thought it was weird too. And we did what we had to do, and we left. And then I moved to college, and I found people who wanted to drink like me for the most part. But what I didn't know is we had like a lot of really different stuff going on inside of our heads, right? So on the outside, like our drinking looked pretty similar, like drink on the weekends, you know, work hard during the week, but you know, drink as much as we could on the weekends. What I didn't know is that everybody wasn't getting this like panicky feeling in their soul, like when they couldn't find alcohol. Like, you know, I wasn't 21. I didn't have a fake ID. I lived in Boston. Like my experience was, it was not very easy to, I don't know why. I had a hard time getting booze in college. I don't know what it was. I've heard people, I don't know. I had a hard time, and maybe I just couldn't find enough. Right. But I just remember being panicked about it all the time, that I wasn't going to have enough, that, you know, I wasn't going to have it often enough. And none of my friends had that going on, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that that difference was happening. And the relief I would get when I was able to just party the way that I wanted to, was wonderful. And, you know, and that's when I started to get introduced, and I started to become slightly aware, right, of like our disease and the three parts of our disease. So, you know, I had this physical craving, like I can't stop drinking alcohol once I start. As I said, like I've never had one drink. I've never had two. Maybe I would pause for like a little while in the middle, but like I had to go to oblivion at some point or another. Like I pretty much drank to blackout every time I drank. And that physical craving and that phenomenon was, you know, beyond my control. And then I had the mental obsession piece of it too, where I'm like thinking about alcohol all the time. And you know, those two things like divorced each other. Like you're not an alcoholic. Like if you just have a physical craving, then like you, and a phenomena, what happens, and like, you just probably won't do it. You know, like I know that when I eat cake, I like to eat a lot of cake, and it is hard for me to stop eating cake. So I pick when I want to eat cake because I don't want to, you know, it's like, it's a silly example, but right. Like those things, like if I wasn't an alcoholic, I could probably just like pick and choose. And then the mental obsession, like, you know, if I just had that, then like when I took a drink, it would probably help, right? Like if I took a drink, if I'm thinking about alcohol all the time and I drink it, I will probably stop thinking about it. But paired together, like it's a lethal combination. And then you pair that, right, with the third of the spiritual malady, which was, you know, something that always plagued me from a young age. Like I am someone who has been seeking God her entire life.
when I was little, I used to, like, I have this distinct memory of, like, riding a bike in my neighborhood and hearing wind chimes, but I didn't know they were wind chimes, and I thought God was talking to me. And I just remember, like, sitting there, and, like, the wind was blowing, and I was like, oh, that's God. God's talking to me. And I think I eventually figured out that it was someone's wind chimes on their porch. Doesn't mean it wasn't God. But I you know, like, I was always seeking something bigger than me, and I always suffered from, like, lack of a higher power at a very young age. Like, I had, like, severe anxiety attacks about, like, dying at a very young age. I had, and it was all, like, symptoms of just, like, not really believing in something that was bigger than me. And so all those three things together, you know, they just make me, like, a really bad alcoholic that hit her bottom, like, really quickly. You know, I got sober when I was 23 years old. And that, you know, the drinking got really, really bad, right? In college, I kind of had people who would party with me, and it didn't look too terrible to the outside world. And I kept up appearances, and, you know, I had good grades, and everything kind of looked okay on the outside. And, you know, once I graduated college, things, you know, everybody slowed down. Everybody kind of grew up, and I didn't, you know? And so then I just started drinking in secret. And I just did what I needed to do party the way that I wanted to party. And so, you know, like, before everybody would get ready to go out, like, I probably had 6 or 7 drinks before, like, the pregame with my friends even started. You know, and, like, I wouldn't make it through the night. I was not fun. Nobody really wanted to be around me. But I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol, you know? And again, like, I had plenty of people in my life that I could tell you who had problems with alcohol. But that was not me. I had very, very little self-awareness of my problem. And people, you know, towards the end of my drinking, people asked me to stop. You know, people were like, I remember my friends had, like, an intervention with me at California Pizza Kitchen. And they were like, you should probably stop. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I probably should. And I remember, like, wanting to, but never making any effort to. Like, I had no human power to make any effort to slow down. Like, I just truly couldn't. I didn't know what it looked like. In my heart, I didn't want to hurt these people that loved me so much. And, you know, despite, like, many things that I had done to hurt them, not purposely, but despite many things that I had done to hurt them, like, they still loved me, and I just had no power. You know, I was beyond human aid. There was nothing I could do to stop. And so, you know, my last drink, which is on February 25th of 2011, you know, I had woken up on the, So I had woken up on a Friday morning, and I'm like doing the math, man. I'm like, no, I got this right. So on a Friday morning, I'd woken up, you know, and I had called out of work. I was working from home, which I was an administrative assistant in corporate, like, in finance. You can't really work from home. Like, you have to answer phones. And, like, now you probably could, but then you could not. And I was working from home. It was a really snowy winter, and I had worked from home a lot, which was just code for staying home and getting drunk by myself all day. And I was, you know, calling out of work once again, and someone I worked with kind of called me on it. It was like, I don't know what's going on with you, but, like, you got to figure it out. And very quickly, I saw that the jig could be up. Like, everything started to add up a little bit. I had done, like, a lot of damage the weeks prior. Like, I kept calling my dad and leaving voicemails yelling at him, but the voicemail was, like, a Spanish woman, like, a woman speaking Spanish. My dad is not a woman who speaks Spanish, but I insisted on leaving these voicemails. Like, I was that drunk that I couldn't coherently understand that, like, this was not my dad's voicemail. I had the wrong phone number, and I continued to just leave, like, voicemails about everything that he did wrong in my childhood on this poor woman's mailbox. I feel badly for her. I did that to a couple of, like, adults in my life, like my mom's ex-boyfriend, my mother. At the time, my mom was about 2 years sober, and I remember her saying to me in those final days, like, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you have a God-sized hole in your heart, and, like, I don't know how to fill it. And she truly says she did not know I was an alcoholic. Like, she did not know I was drinking. I don't know. But so things started to, like, start to get on top of me at that point. And I called out of work, and then this woman had said, you know, I don't know what you're doing. And so something came to me, you know, and, like, today I describe it as, you know, like, God came into my life that morning, and I had this moment of just, like, you have to be done. And, like, if you don't stop, like, you're going to die, and you're going to lose everything that you care about. Like, there is no outcome here. And I just had this thought of, like, I think I'm done.
And I drank all the alcohol in my house after that thought, because I was like, all right, well, I'm going to be done then. I'm going to get good and drunk, and then I'll be done. And then I had the thought to get into a cab and go to a hospital. I don't know where that thought came from. I was alone. I packed a bag. I got in the car to go to the hospital. They brought me, they thought I was visiting someone. So they brought me to like the visitor's entrance, but I passed out in the cab. So as he got there, then the EMTs had to like physically had to like drive me from the visitor entrance to the admitted entrance of the ER. My blood alcohol content was 0.45, which for a 23-year-old girl is pretty high. And it just shows you how much I was drinking at the time. And I told them I wanted to kill myself. And I did. I mean, for all intents and purposes, what I was doing, like, I looked like I was killing myself. And so I was there for a few days, and like, that was it for me, you know, like that was my last drink. And I did not wake up in that, psychiatric facility thinking, I'm so glad I did that. I'm so happy to be sober. This is what I want to do. You know, I woke up thinking, oh crap, what have I done? And I'm not so sure about this. And oh no, I'll never drink champagne at my wedding. despite being 23, single with no romantic prospects, very worried about my wedding that first day. You know, and I'm really lucky. You know, my mom came up with her sponsor, and they came with my two best friends, and they came and talked to me, and you know, and her sponsor talked to me about AA in a way that my mom couldn't. And I left that facility. You know, when I was in that facility, we did some AA meetings, and then when I got ready to leave, because I was convincing them that I could leave, that I was well enough, like I made a whole action plan of all the things I was going to do when I got out, so that I could get out, and I made a list of all these meetings I was going to go to. And I did it, you know, I left and I had the willingness. And the first meeting I went to was the meeting at MGH, and it was like six men. And I was like, well, this isn't for me. And they were very nice. And at the end of the meeting, they told me there's lots of meetings with young people and women. And they gave me, you know, circled some things in our little meeting list books. And then I, you know, I checked out some other meetings. And you know, a week later, probably about a week after that first meeting, I think I had gone to some other meetings, but I'm on a crowded Orange Line train, and I look up, and it's one of those six guys from that meeting, and he's just standing in front of me, and he's like, hey, how you doing? And he's like, have you gone to some meetings? Yeah. And he's like, do you have a big book yet? And I'm like, no. And he like pulls out a fresh copy from his bag and just hands it to me, and still my big book today. And you know, and like that, like it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. Like, again, like moments of where God came into my life. Like, I don't know, like I was much of my life, I've been a big, fate God person. I'm actually working on this very actively right now, cause it's not working for me anymore. Right. Like the concept of like, you know, whatever should be will be, or like, you know, the concept of like, yeah, kind of fate and destiny and stuff like that. It's not working anymore. But I operated on that off for a very, very long time, and it worked for a really long time. And that's okay. We all have different conceptions and they all work. But at the time I was a big fate person. So the fact that this person handed me a book on this train, on this very crowded train, was a signal to me to keep going. And I, you know, I went to tons of AA meetings in Back Bay and Boston. It took me 3 months to get a sponsor. I was terrified to ask anyone to help me. People gave me their number all the time, and I was just too scared to call anyone. And I was lucky I had, you know, those same friends who loved me before. Like, they were staying home with me every night, hanging out with me on the weekends. Like, I didn't have this, like, burning, like, oh, no, I have nothing to do. I have no one to talk to. So I kind of felt like I was good, and I stayed on the outskirts of AA for about those first 3 months. But luckily, I stayed sober. And I remember in a meeting, I raised my hand. I told everyone I was on step three. Cause like I was reading the big book, but I wasn't working any steps with the sponsor. And I was like, I was reading last night, I'm working on my step three. And enough people in this meeting knew that I did not have a sponsor that they were like, huh. And a woman came over and, you know, asked me a coffee, and, you know, I went to coffee with her, and, though I was too scared to ask her to be my sponsor in that coffee date, I texted her afterwards and asked her to be my first sponsor. And, you know, we got to work, and we did the steps like really, really thoroughly that first time. And I had a spiritual experience, you know, like I changed. The person who came in here like fundamentally changed, right? Like steps 1, 2, and 3 were a lot about, like, I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I knew my life was unmanageable. That was very clear to me. And coming to believe in a power greater than myself, felt like I had enough willingness, right? Like I'm a firm believer in like, whatever you believe in, go with that. Like, it will build and grow over time. And that was my experience, and it changed and it continues to change. And I had enough willingness to say, like, yep, I believe in something bigger. Let's keep going. And then, you know, starting to doing step three and turning my life over and really like the steps that follow, because, you know, when we're newly sober, like a third step is, you know, it's been pointed out to me is like a third step is like turning our will and our life over to care of God as we understood him. And then doing your fourth step, right? Like then continuing on with the body of the work that is laid out in the big book after that. And that's, you know, right. Taking that inventory, telling it to somebody else, and everything that follows. And for me, where I got a lot of my power back was in, you know, step four. I had been a victim my whole life. Like everybody did wrong by me. And that was not working for me anymore. You know, like I was drinking at a lot of people. I was angry at a lot of people. And it really provided a lot of insight to see that like pretty much all the cases, like I had stepped on the toes of my fellows and then they retaliated, you know, like it's as simple as like the girl in high school who bullied me and made my life misery. And she did. That is a fact. However, we were best friends in the 7th and 8th grade, and I ditched her because she wasn't that cool anymore. You know, like she wasn't as cool when we got to high school, and like I saw a cooler group of people that could get me access to the boys I wanted to meet and the type of people I wanted to be with, and I ditched her. So no wonder she spent 4 years making my life miserable. Like that, you know, and it's not that that's okay, but like the clarity that came with that, and it's a very simple example, but like that was repeated throughout most of my inventory, the clarity and the power that like life wasn't just happening to me and that I played a part in it, really changed things for me. And continues to, right? Like the power of inventory today and being able to take something when I'm so angry about something or fearful and see, you know, what my part is tremendously helpful. And telling that fourth step to somebody else, you know, really changed things for me. Like I struggle with intimacy. I struggle with close friendships. You know, like I struggle with letting people in, and doing that and building that with someone really meant a lot to me. And getting that insight from somebody else about just the stuff I can't see on my own was, a real like turning point for me. And then, you know, and then going out and making amends, you know, and I'm talking about all this in like the first wave that I did it, because I often think of that as like what really changed things for me. But, you know, like I was taught to like go out and make all of my amends, you know, like there was one amend I did not make that involved sexual assault. Like the rest of my amends I made, and I made them directly, you know, and that was powerful, you know, and going to these people, even when people let me off the hook, you know, 80% of people let me off the hook. They said like, yeah, you weren't that bad. Oh, it wasn't that bad. But you know, for the people that were most important in my life, like one, I gained a tremendous amount of like self-respect and like the ability to hold my head high and go into situations and know that like I was a woman of dignity and honor now. And I could, you know, and like I had made, you know, I had made amends, like I changed the behavior that was happening, but I also recognized the harm that I did. And in the most important relationships, like amends opened up like gates with other people. Like it, my best friend who I, you know, really did so, so much damage to, she, you know, I remember making amends to her and sitting outside on a bench in Southie, and like, I can see it in my mind because it was such a moment. And like, you know, I told her everything, and I'd worked with my sponsor on the wording and how I should say it and what I should say. And then, you know, at the end of it said like, is there anything else you want to talk about? And she had a list of things she wanted to talk about, you know, and like a lot of stuff I didn't see. And that's important. Like, just like I don't see it all in my inventory with my, and my sponsor points it out. Like I need, like, I don't see, I can't even tell you the truth of what happened today in a day, right? Like I don't have an honest self-appraisal tool. Like I get there sometimes, but like, having the ability to open up that relationship, and to this day, you know, I'm still best friends with that woman. Like the fact that we can talk openly and honestly when things come up is a direct result of like this program and like AA being in my life and in her life by extension. And so, yeah, I'm not going to talk about every single step, but those things were so important to like what, you know, what got me sober and what really kept me in here in those early years. And, you know, since then I have continued to, work the steps and, you know, many times, and I've gotten a new sponsor when my sponsor moved away. I've sponsored other people, and, you know, my life just like continued to change. You know, like I became a woman who could like be in a relationship. Like I really truly, like I had a high school boyfriend who I did like a lot of damage to. Like he was a, no, thank you. I do not want to hear your amends. Like, no, no, no. I don't think he responded. He just like didn't respond to my attempt. That was the literally only relationship I'd ever been in until I met my husband, you know, and that was separated by 10 years of like, I was unable to form like serious like relationships with men. And I became a woman like who could be in a serious relationship, who could like find the right guy. And that was all through AA, right? Like our big book tells us, like I wrote a sex ideal of like what I wanted my relationship to look like and like the kind of woman I wanted to show up as and the kind of person that I wanted to show up in my relationship. And, you know, I had to realize quickly that that was not a, like a recipe for the exact person I was going to marry. Like it wasn't a like, here you go. And I have to wait for that exact perfect person, but I got pretty close. And, you know, and I became someone who can be in those relationships and I married him and like, and we have a family and getting to our family was not easy. And AA gave me the tools to be able to go through all of that. Like I remember at one point, you know, years into our journey of trying to have kids, and going into like the later stages of that and being like, oh, that like, I feel like, am I not taking it seriously enough? Like I'm saying this to my sponsor, like, I feel like I'm not having as hard of a time with it as other people have. And she was like, no, like, I think you just like work a program and you have some tools to like help you get through this stuff. You know, like life doesn't stop coming at us just because we get sober. Life doesn't become perfect. If anything, but it gets more complicated. It gets fuller. Gets more beautiful. And we have the tools that we need today to help us meet those challenges, right? I have two young children. I have an almost 3-year-old and a 9-month-old. My husband and I both work. Like our lives are really busy and full in the greatest ways, but like I'm very well aware of if I don't do what I need to do in this program, like it all goes away. You know, and it doesn't even have to just be about the drinking. Like if I don't keep myself in fit spiritual condition, it all goes away. You know, there was one day like in the last year, I don't know, I lost my temper in front of my kid and I'm like, I throw a really good temper tantrum. And when I get mad, like I yell, I throw, I punch things into walls. I try not to be that girl too often. I certainly do not want to be that woman in front of my children. But there was a day in the last year where I was arguing with my husband in front of my kid, and I just got so mad, and I like threw my phone on the ground. And like that, you know, like that is not good, and that is not okay, and that is not who I want to be, you know? Like it's not just about not drinking, you know? It's about being someone who has the tools, right? Like, I can do what our book says on a daily basis. I can get up in the morning. I can pray and meditate. You know, I can do what the book talks about when it says upon awakening. At night, I can do, you know, when we retire, like, what are the things it talks about there? I can make it simple enough for me to do, to stay in fit spiritual condition. When things come up during the day, like, I can use the tools that I have of, you know, years of being in here of how do I think about this? How do I write some inventory? Who do I need to talk to let go of some of those resentments? I sponsor other women. Like all of those things are really important to make sure that I show up today as like the wife and the mom and the daughter and the sister and all the other roles, the worker that I have, all the other roles that I play. I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, like despite growing up and all of that dysfunction, like most of my family's sober today and has been sober, like pretty much everyone, you know, like is sober. And that's like the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like what a gift, you know, like a girl like me and the family that I grew up in, like everyone should be dead. Like really, like everyone should be dead. No one should be here. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't have the life of my wildest dreams, like something that I never thought I would have. And that's, you know, a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous and this program. So if you're new, welcome. We're glad that you're here. Get a sponsor. Like it doesn't have to be your forever sponsor. Just ask someone to help you. Work the steps. Like this is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
you know, going to meetings for me, like, I'm really lucky that 3 months of going to meetings, like, I didn't drink. Like, I'm very, very lucky that that did not happen. I'm really, really grateful for that. That is not the story of a lot of people. You know, find someone who will work the steps with you. And, you know, like, the life that you've been waiting for is, like, on the other side, I promise you. Like, I've seen it happen enough with enough people. I've experienced it firsthand myself. And it's here for you. You just have to reach out and ask for help, and we're there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Christina. Let me see. Okay, we encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. Now we have Angelica and Mike for festivities.
You go first, I'll go first. Hey, I'm Angelica. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Angelica.
Boop, boop, boop. Sorry we changed the script just a second ago. Okay, here at Beacon, we do fellowship after the meeting.